Anyways, I was excited to see your book and to see your story because it's exactly the kind of content that I wanted to get for the site. So maybe you could just describe what was happening, like what was your condition, and you had breast cancer, and like how did it all come about? What was happening in your life? You were newly married, I guess, and.
I was 27 years old, and I was 38 weeks pregnant with our first child, and I discovered a lump, and within about 48 hours was diagnosed with breast cancer.
So you went to the doctor, and the doctor said there was nothing you could do, or he said radiation?
They recommended first was surgery, which I did undergo a lumpectomy and sentinel node biopsy. And then based on the pathology results of my cancer, they recommended very aggressive chemotherapy, radiation, and 5 years of hormone therapy. And some of the doctors said I would die if I did not do all of those things. Another physician recommended additional extensive surgery. So I turned all of that down and instead did a herbal medicine, primarily herbal medicine treatment protocol under the guidance of a clinic in Oregon. It's called the Center for Natural Healing. The nice thing about it is you don't have to travel to the clinic. They do all their consultations remotely.
And so really, in summarizing Holly's case, John, it really highlights a couple of problems with conventional breast cancer treatment in particular. One is, and we've since confirmed this, but you know, at the time, it was just a fast and furious learning process on our part to try to figure all this out quickly. But there's really two problems. There's widespread overtreatment of women, meaning treating lots and lots of women, at least tens of thousands a year, who don't need the treatments they're getting. But then there's also a certain subcategory of women with breast cancer who are really only going to get sicker with the kind of bog standard conventional treatments that are in use. So Holly's, you know, it wasn't late stage cancer, it wasn't early stage either, it was kind of middle of the road. But as she mentioned, when they looked at the big picture, their treatment recommendations were very, very aggressive. They said that by definition, cancer in a 27-year-old woman is a very aggressive cancer, but then there were all these very specific diagnostic indicators, prognostic indicators that were negative. So 6 months of aggressive chemotherapy, bunch of rounds of radiation therapy. Again, she mentioned the one surgeon wanted to do additional surgery, pretty extensive surgery too, scoop out all the lymph nodes in her right arm and a little bit more. And then the 5 years of hormone treatment, that's tamoxifen, the drug. And so, you know, the rest of the story, fast forwarding, is that Holly rejected all of that, and she was right and they were wrong. So here we are, we're 8 years out, and she's the picture of health, and she never had to go through any of those harmful treatments. So that really is just a big looming question mark for the breast cancer world. You know, how many more times are they wrong like this?
And when you say they were wrong, how do you define that they were wrong? Just in the fact that she was able to heal herself through these herbal medicine, or?
Well, they said I, some doctors said I would die if I did not follow those conventional treatment
Awesome.
recommendations,
Yeah.
but all of them said this was not a choice, this was not optional, this was absolutely necessary. I had to do all of this. And when you're terrified with the cancer diagnosis and you're sitting in a doctor's office and you presume that they have all the knowledge that there is about how best to treat cancer, you're taking this as truth, and unfortunately it's not the whole picture.
Yeah,
Okay,
so to add to that,
yeah.
we would break that the answer down into two sub-answers, if you will, to your question. So in the book, we argue that if, especially given how really, really toxic these treatments are, radiation and chemotherapy in particular, and there's no denying that the treatments are a lot better than they were 20 or 30 years ago, but that's not saying a whole lot. 20 and 30 years ago and beyond, you might die within days of starting a chemo protocol. And so they were just like instantly fatal in many cases. So it's not the case now. They've really refined those drugs, and that's good news. That's to be celebrated. But still, these are really toxic treatments. So we would say, if your doctors tell you need toxic treatments and you don't, that's a medical mistake. And then the second part is, if they give you these treatments and they don't work, then that's also a medical mistake. Because what happens if you're treated for cancer with these aggressive conventional treatments and it doesn't work, you're actually worse off because your body is really, really damaged and the cancer is back, or it's back and it's worse, which is not uncommon as well. So both of those cases are, those are real problems for conventional medicine to answer to. We, in our book, we just come out and say, hey, those are medical mistakes and we can do better. And obviously we think that Holly's treatment choices were a whole lot better.
Okay, so how did you come to these decisions, like to forgo? I mean, I can tell you were probably scared when you got diagnosed by the doctor. How did you make that decision not to go through the treatments that they were suggesting? Well, I guess you guys had a lot of conversations.
Yeah, it was definitely a process. It wasn't a decision. It was not a decision made lightly nor quickly. So from diagnosis to the actual final decision day was 2 months. And I was on maternity leave. Patrick took a leave of absence from work, and we basically just researched day and night. So books, journals, medical studies, and then we would go in. We met with dozens of different physicians, oncologists, and so we do our research, come up with the questions, go into the oncologist's office, ask them the questions, which would then lead to more questions that we'd go back, research. It was a very intense, full-time job.
And we should note that we were not at all inclined or aware of alternative medicine, not even healthy eating, really. We lived across the street from a Carl's Jr. and a McDonald's, and, you know, that sort of typified our diet, lots of sodas and all that. I mean, we were relatively fit people, but, you know, that's part of the story of health in Western societies, right, is that even, well, relatively fit people can be pretty sick under the covers. So anyway, even just within seeking out information about, within the bounds of conventional medicine, we interviewed a lot of different doctors. We got lots of different opinions, probably 4 or 5 different medical oncologists, the chemotherapy folks, several different radiation oncologists, and probably 3 or 4 at least surgeons. And we recommend that strongly when we give people our opinions on how they should proceed. At the very least, even if you're not going to try, you know, we call it traditional medicine, alternative medicine, then at the very least, you should really get multiple opinions from the conventional physicians that you're talking to. And we did that for sure in the extreme. Then we took just the very first steps ever in our lives towards non-conventional medicine. So a neighbor recommended an oriental medicine doctor in Santa Monica where we lived. And we went to see her, and she pulled a book off her shelf written by the founder of the clinic that ended up treating Holly. But it was just this series of somewhat serendipitous steps that led us in the direction, and it just went from there.
Also, we should note, and this is talked about in detail in the book, that I was actually hours away from beginning chemotherapy. So I was on track to start all the conventional treatment recommendations because I didn't want to do nothing. And while my gut instinct was saying it wasn't the right way, it took us months to find a scientifically valid alternative.
Yeah, so you must have come across quite a few alternative therapies.
We did, but we have pretty high standards, so we really wanted to choose a treatment that was proven, that intuitively made sense, and yeah, it took us a couple of months to find it. Unfortunately, a lot of these you know, really valid alternative treatments are very much hidden from view. They're very hard to find.
So how did you whittle them down? Like, how did you decide to go this herbalist route? Because that's a pretty big decision when you made it.
It was. The book that Patrick just mentioned a moment ago that was recommended to us, it's called Herbal Medicine, Healing, and Cancer. That was such a thorough, scientifically based book that immediately made me want to call the clinic, which the author had founded that clinic. And it just, I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, and the other, one of the things, that, so we had just come out of, as Holly mentioned, months of really, really, really intense discussions and in-depth discussions with all sorts of conventional docs. And then we spoke to Donnie Yance, the founder of that clinic. And this hasn't changed in more than 8 years now since Holly's original diagnosis. But we've not met anyone who has a better understanding of the disease, cancer, than the folks at this clinic, and Donnie in particular. And that was really eye-opening. You know, like, for example, there are other good therapies out there. Like, the Gerson therapy is a good therapy. It has cured a lot of people with very serious cancer. But the Gerson process seemed to be a little bit more diffuse. Like, we couldn't find, like one Gerson expert clinic. Whereas these folks, you know, they're not Gerson therapists, but they have their own model similar to Gerson therapy. And they're all concentrated at that clinic. They've been practicing for decades. I think it's over 20 years now. Only really treating cancer. I mean, about 99% of what they treat is cancer. They've treated some other ailments too. So they were just concentrated and really in-depth experts at what they did.
The other thing that really drew us to this clinic is that they are by no means anti-conventional treatment. In fact, they do use chemotherapy in certain cases, but they use it in a very different way, which we talk about in the book. They did not think it was necessary for my case, and certainly not necessary at that point in my disease. It was something they said, really, you should keep it in your back pocket, meaning you start with treatments that are going to do the least amount of harm, and then you pull in toxic treatments only if it's necessary down the line. So that was another really important thing that again, attracted us to the clinic. Their knowledge of conventional treatment, it was the same as sitting with an oncologist.
Or better, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And the reverse, of course, is not true. Conventional oncologists don't know the first thing about anti-angiogenesis and nutritional starving of cancer via your diet, or the slew of other deeply scientific things that are out there in the traditional medicine world, the non-conventional medicine world. But the reverse was true with these folks at the clinic. They had really in-depth information about all the chemotherapy cocktails and the various drugs and the pros and cons and so forth. Holly mentioned another really important point, which is that at some point we realized that there was also a very different logic applied over just overall decision-making logic, quite apart from any of the differences in particulars, like using herbs versus, you know, cytotoxic drugs. But the overall logic was also very different. With conventional medicine, it was break out the big guns right away and let them fly. And we thought, well, man, that, you know, Holly's 27 years old. She's got a whole life ahead of her. And sure enough, this has become a prominent topic of discussion now, where because so many younger people are getting cancer, younger adults in particular, a lot of thoughtful physicians are starting to step back and say, well, wait a minute, we don't have good information on what happens when you've given people massive doses of chemotherapy and radiation in their 20s and in their 30s, you know, large numbers of people. So that logical problem has played out. The folks from the clinic had the exact opposite. They said, let's see if we can calm your body down. Let's see if we can make sure we get on top of the cancer. And, of course, there was always a lot of caution, very, very close monitoring. Holly had blood tests and breast exams and safe scans every 6 weeks at least for like 2 years. So a lot of very cautious watching and waiting, and then using smart, safe medicine to see if that's working. And so if that works, you know, why break out? And like she said, break out the big guns later only if necessary, and it wasn't necessary.
But you said that she did it remotely, so how did she have all these tests done if you guys did it remotely?
You have to have your, you know, a team of local physicians, and you have to find ones that will order tests that the clinic asks them to order. Some of them, you know, the physicians are ordering anyway, and so it's just a matter of sending over the results to the clinic to review and analyze.
And how did you choose your team? Was it just your regular doctor?
No, we interviewed multiple different oncologists and decided on one just based on, again, we think about interviewing physicians. Most people don't think about it in that way, but we actively sat down with different doctors and asked them a lot of questions and then made a decision on who we wanted to work with. And also, you know, if they wanted to work with me, especially when I decided to turn down conventional treatment, at least one physician wouldn't even return phone calls. She would have nothing more to do with me.
And for Holly's particular treatment protocol, this was relatively easier to pull off. So, for example, if you need physicians to administer chemotherapy, if that were to have been part of the clinic's treatment protocol, that's a harder thing to find someone to do because the clinic's in the lead and they have a very different way of administering chemotherapy. It's the dosing and the timing is all very different. The drugs that are used, they do a lot of off-label drug use. So it'd be really hard to find an oncologist to participate in that kind of thing. They're used to being in charge.
But you can find them.
Yeah, you can definitely find them. But in Holly's case, since chemotherapy wasn't part of the protocol, the oncologist we did find, the local oncologist who did exams and all that, who was just a wonderful person, by the way.
She basically agreed to monitor me.
Yeah, she was doing the physical exams and then running a lot of blood tests. And then elsewhere we sought out imaging technology as well to help with that, and that was really the whole process.
Cool. Okay, going back to your original condition, when you experienced the lump in your breast, were you feeling tired? Did you have any other symptoms?
I was 38 weeks pregnant, so it's kind of hard to sort out what you're feeling at that point, just because there's so many different late pregnancy symptoms that one experiences, including breast lumps. So initially my midwife and OBGYN just figured it was a benign pregnancy-related breast cyst. But luckily they took it seriously and did an ultrasound and biopsy right away.
And did you ever experience any real symptoms of this?
Of the cancer?
Yeah.
You mean? It's a hard question to answer because part of what the clinic does is that they address the underlying reasons why cancer developed in the first place. So by rebalancing the body, all my other health ailments that I'd experienced for a couple decades completely disappeared. So you could argue that a lot of those health ailments were partly because there was cancer in my body. So again, hard question to answer. I can tell you my energy went through the roof when I began my treatment protocol under the clinic, and I had a newborn baby, and I had numerous other health problems completely disappear, including migraines, frequent GI problems, cysts, vertigo, just everything went away.
Cool. And so now on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? Perfect?
I do. Now, I became much, ironically, I was much healthier after the cancer, after the treatment.
That's great. And I guess it probably changed Patrick's life, too.
Nutritional science is a key component to this treatment. So he also completely changed his diet. Probably the best way to summarize it is we only eat whole foods, meaning non-processed foods, and as much organic as possible.
And we decided to go all in on this approach. So we changed our diet, we changed all of our personal care and home care products. We even changed a lot of how we live spiritually and emotionally and mentally. And so we both really went all in. We weren't going to have dad's food and mom's food, or mom's food and the kid's food, or something like that. So it's really transformed our whole life inside and out, and that's been one of the benefits for sure.
Yeah, it's really about just reducing exposure to toxins.
And so when you say spiritually, you mean stress, I'm guessing?
Yes.
Reducing it?
Yes, definitely.
There's certain things that when you look at the big picture of wellness in Western societies, it's pretty clear. I mean, the writing's on the wall. There's certain things we absolutely have to start doing. We've got to have a better diet. Our diets are toxic. We have to reduce stress. We just live way too stressful our lives. And so anyway, in our research, those things really leapt out, and so they're really required, and in the book we argue that especially if you have cancer, but even if you don't, it's really time to start paying attention to these things.
Perfect. So I'm going to make an assumption that a lot of other people that go to this clinic, that they haven't always, not everybody's successful, or would you say, what's the success rate?
you know, I think they have different success rates depending on the cancer, but it's pretty spectacular because most of the patients that come to them are stage 3, stage 4. A lot of them have only been given a few weeks or months to live, and that they have such a tremendous success rate with that population really says a lot about their treatment approach. They're also very focused on quality of life, so even if they aren't able to extend the life long term, they are able to make the end of life more comfortable. And we do highlight some case studies from the clinic in the book.
Okay. So what do you feel was the difference between you guys, or you getting cured, Holly, and then the others who haven't been as successful?
You know, I haven't talked to a lot of those that have not been successful, so that's a little bit of a hard question to answer. I can just tell you what I did do, which was I was, 200% committed to this. So, you know, once they prescribe the protocol, they can't make sure you take every single pill and tincture and substance that is prescribed versus, you know, when you're going in for chemotherapy, that's a very easy thing to administer, and they know what you got when you got it. So I was, 200% committed to the protocol, to the diet changes, to all the lifestyle changes, and I really looked. Eventually, it took me a little bit of time, but I did look at it as a gift to myself to be able to live the rest of my life healthier, and also a gift to my family.
And there's a really key distinction between Holly and others, even other patients at the clinic. As she mentioned, the majority of patients who come there after many, many years of failed conventional treatment. And by that time, not only is your cancer usually worse, cancer will actually adapt to conventional treatments. It'll start blocking the mechanisms that by which they function, so in a sense the cancer becomes stronger or smarter. But of course at the same time, the body is getting sicker all the time, more and more depleted. And so there is really a point of no return. And the beautiful thing about Holly's situation is that it was close. We were this close, like she said, a day away to starting those treatments, but she never once started down that path. Of those very harmful conventional treatments. So
I was an easier patient for them in some respect because I hadn't done any damage to my body.
Yeah. And you were stage 1, right?
No, I was stage 2.
Stage 2. Great.
Stage 2, grade 2. There were a pair of tumors in the breast instead of one. And technically she was node positive, lymph node positive. So, but then beyond that, there were some other diagnostic indicators or prognostic indicators that were negative. She's HER2.
That were not good. That's what he means when he says negative.
Poor prognosis, right?
Again, anytime you have cancer in a young person, it's almost always a more aggressive cancer.
Great. So I guess I'm on to my last question. Do you have any words of wisdom or thoughts on healing that might help other people?
I have lots. You know, a couple things that come to mind is how important it is to get a hold of the fear and to stay calm, especially during that decision-making process, because when you're making really life-altering decisions in a state of panic and fear, you can make some mistakes. So trying to find that state of calm and surrounding yourself with people that can assist with that, I think, is so important. And then the second thing is really to assemble a good team of practitioners on both sides of the fence, so to speak, meaning conventional and non-conventional, and then explicitly choose who you want to lead your treatment. And if you end up primarily going with conventional treatment, to make sure that you do still address the underlying reasons why the cancer developed in the first place, usually that does require having an alternative practitioner on your team.
Yeah, one of the ways we like to summarize the story. This is really a story about integrative medicine. The future is one of integrative medicine, integrating all the wisdom that we've learned over, say, the last 5,000 years or so. Conventional medicine, by definition, is not complete. It's very, very good at certain things that it does, and when you need those tools and when they're the right tools for the job, they're pretty outstanding. But they're not the whole picture, and in particular, as Holly just mentioned, and as we talk over and over again about, you really need to get to the root causes, which is diet and stress and the overall balance of your body. So that really means putting together a complete team to look at the whole picture, and that's really the best way to get well.
That's great. Well, thank you guys so much.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, that's great. We really appreciate you having us, John.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Take care.
Okay, bye.